Okay, we're on another episode of Ryan Seaman and Friends. I can't believe it. I still have a show here at Adobe. This is kind of insane. It's been about like a year and some change, and I just want to thank everybody for tuning in, and I guess let's get to it. So this week, I met my next guest, my friend, Andrew. His name's Andrew. I met him in Nashville through another guest I've had on the show named Joey Ariema.
Oh, yeah.
And he was like, hey, you want to come meet my friend Andrew over this hotel? I think we went to a hotel, right? Or you were staying at a hotel.
We had an Airbnb.
Yeah, you guys were writing together.
Yes.
Yeah, maybe it was an Airbnb. Yeah, you're right. So we were doing that. And Andrew Hagar. Andrew, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule and coming on my show.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
So, yeah, I mean, We've been keeping in touch a lot. You've been you're living mostly in, like, you know, I can't keep up with what you're doing all the time.
Dude, I'm all over the place.
Yeah, you're like in NorCal, you're in SoCal, you go to Nashville sometimes. You're just kind of traveling around the country, and I bring on people here just to kind of get like their story of like how they came to be. It could be like actors or musicians or bands are like underground, or it could be people that have opened up like, you know, small businesses or anything like that. So, I mean, I just want to have you on because I think you're an interesting guy.
Thank you.
I think you and I hit it off like pretty well when we first met, and I just think you're fucking hilarious. So
thanks,
I just want to have the same sense of humor. But man. So, I guess I just want to know everything about you, man. You know, like, I mean, this is kind of the reason why I do this show.
Yeah,
you know, it's just to kind of get more FaceTime with people that I just normally can't. You know,
totally.
Get on a daily.
This industry is full of just like kooks and crazy people, you know? So, and I would qualify myself as both of those things. So, you know, we have some stories.
No, man. Oh, absolutely. I mean, you've probably had like a crazy life just, you know, coming up. So I want to get into it. So, like, okay, so bring me to where you're like, because how I got started, basically, I was like, I don't know, I was like a, you know, or not even a teenager yet when I started playing music.
Yeah.
You know?
And Warped Tour, you did all kinds of crazy
stuff. I did that when I was like 18, like right when I graduated high school. You know,
Jesus.
Just like playing in like local punk rock bands, and that like, you know, that snowballed into like something else. So I'm just trying to figure out like, okay, so where does Andrew Hagar get to start with everything? When does it start for you? Like when you decide like, hey, I wanna sing, I wanna be, you know, a musician. Like take me back to.
That actually started fairly recently. I never in my life
would
have thought I'd ended up in music.
Yeah.
You know, when I was a kid, my dad wanted to become like a lawyer, a doctor or something.
He wanted you to become a lawyer or
doctor. Oh, yeah. He had some other plans for me. He wanted me to turn and run away, kicking and screaming from the entertainment industry because, he's maybe seen some things. I don't know. You know, maybe done some things. Who knows?
He might have been in a couple couple successful, projects.
But no, at the end of the day, he wanted like a more kind of sustainable lifestyle for me. So, he really pushed me through school. And I don't know, I went to the school where it was like mandatory to do choir and sing and do musical theater. So I was like a theater kid. And, you know.
So you grew up like in Northern California, though? Or
like Central California. I grew up in the Monterey Peninsula. I lived out in Big Sur for a long time in the boonies.
Nice.
You know, a bunch of crunchy ass rich people.
Sure.
Like rich hippies, you know?
Totally.
It's a very strange dichotomy out there.
Sure.
100%. But I pursued the arts all through school and then found myself in business school after that, going to college and got out of that and started working in the corporate world and just hated it. And then I started.
What'd you do?
I was in marketing and business development. So I worked for like EA Games.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I worked for an upstart tequila company you might be familiar with, Cabo Wabo Tequila.
Sure.
Nepotism is great.
Totally. Yeah. You know,
it happens.
Sure.
But then I ended up working at this company called Pro Elite, which was like, you're familiar with like the UFC, the Ultimate Fighting Championships.
Yeah.
So their rival back in the day was Showtime Sports. They had a weird umbrella company called Elite XC, and they had like a bunch of little fight organizations. And I worked for them in like biz dev and marketing. Worked with like Kimbo Slice, like all these guys. Because that was my passion. And then
was fighting?
Well, yeah, I grew up doing, you know, like karate, martial arts, because I wanted to be like a Ninja Turtle, you know?
Sure. Who didn't, though? You know what I mean?
Honestly.
I fucking loved like Raphael. He was like my favorite.
That was your favorite? You know?
Yeah.
The angry one?
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Damn.
Just had an attitude, man. He was
he
rad.
Did. Yeah.
Also, though, Michelangelo was a party dude.
Yeah,
and
I can also identify
with that 100%.
Big time. You know? So I was a big fan of Leo. I don't know why, but yeah.
Yeah, Donatello was too, like, he's a little nerdy for me.
Super nerdy.
Yeah. But he got things done, you know?
He did.
He worked on the van. You know, they kind of toured it in their own
way. They had their shitty van that was always breaking down, you know?
Totally. Yeah.
They had their, like, you know, hot merch girl and everything.
Totally. Yeah, they had too many fucking gadgets in that thing, though,
they
man.
Did.
You know?
It was too much.
Way
it was
ahead
never going to work.
Yeah. All right, so you're working for this company.
Working for this company, you know, everything's great. I, like, my entire life thought, oh, it would be great to, like, work for a tequila company. Oh, it would be great to work, like, for a video game company. Oh, it'd be great to work for like an MMA company. I literally got three separate opportunities to work like dream jobs.
Yeah.
I just was not happy at all.
Uh-huh.
I was like, you know, smoking way too much weed, just like not happy at home, like going out and drinking with my buddies and just like complaining about work and shit. And I was like, man, is this what I signed up for? Like, is the corporate world like this? And yeah, in a nutshell,
like,
it is.
Yep. People get up at like 7, they get home at like 6,
yeah,
you know, and then it's just like step and repeat.
It's brutal.
That's all it is. Ugh,
you know?
God.
So at a certain point, I had like read this book by Tim Ferriss, The 4-Hour Work Week, when I was working at EA Games. Right after the big crash happened, this was like, I think like early 2009.
Okay.
And I decided to just quit my job, cash out everything, my Roth IRA, my 401k, all that stuff that I built up.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Completely liquidated everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I moved to Amsterdam to...
I like where this is going.
Yeah, okay, right. Yeah. I moved to Amsterdam to train at one of the best gyms in the world called Majiro Gym, which is a fantastic Muay Thai and kickboxing gym.
Okay.
With like these crazy old school champions from this wild Japanese organization, K1.
Yeah.
I was like, screw it, man. I'm just gonna try it.
Totally.
And I went out there, and you know, I was like pretty decent at the time in the gyms I was training at here. I'd competed a bunch in Muay Thai, and I just got smoked by like a 13-year-old kid like my first day there. And I was like, wow, there are levels to this. These guys are so much better.
Wow.
And, yeah, I had like an existential crisis over there. It was insane. Hey. But it was like honestly one of the best things that ever happened to me, because I had so much personal growth, and I came back to America like a few months later and tried to like embark on my career as a professional Muay Thai fighter and like blew my knee out within
a week.
I swear
to
God.
Oh my God, dude. Okay.
We're getting to music.
Oh no. Yeah. This is all just interesting to me, because I got to tell you, we've literally hung out like one time, but we kept in touch. But like this is like why I have this show.
Yeah.
Like, so I could bring on people and just talk about like what it was like for them to just like come up with whatever the fuck. You
totally,
know what I mean?
Man.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. And everybody has a weird roundabout way of getting to this stuff. Like, you know, music finds you. Like, anybody that really wants it, I feel like, no matter what happens in your life, you're going to find a way back to it.
Totally.
And so this is the weirdest, most roundabout story. But essentially, so instead of becoming a professional fighter, because my knee was all messed up and I just quit my nice, cushy corporate job, so I had no way of making money.
Yeah.
I started training people professionally. And
then
shortly thereafter, I got a gig, just got a great opportunity teaching Muay Thai at this guy's gym.
So you came back from Amsterdam at this point?
Came back from Amsterdam. Okay. I'm living in L.A., trying to, like, struggle on unemployment and find my way in the world of martial arts.
Dude, you're speaking my language, except for not the martial arts part. Just the
We've all been there, man.
Sure. Yeah.
Trying to figure out whatever I can do to make some cash and pay 100%. My rent.
Yeah.
And I got a chance to work at this Brazilian guy's gym, by the name of Fabricio Werdum, who would... shortly thereafter, go on to become the UFC heavyweight champion. Wow. So, again, right place, right time.
Yeah.
They took a chance on me, and I started coaching there, and everything worked out. Started coaching professional fighters, amateur fighters, stunt people, all kinds of wild shit.
That's
and
wild.
Then, I did that for better part of 10 years. And then I ran into an old friend, buddy Jesse Christofferson, you know, shout out. And some things happened, and I ended up totally pivoting and going out with his little sister to open up for like Chris Christofferson and Willie Nelson randomly.
Wow.
Yeah, totally crazy. Like, from the frying pan into the fire. I had zero professional experience as a musician. I had like started playing guitar around like 25 just to dabble with my friend Jono in like a little two-man punk band we had called Bulletproof Tiger.
Okay. That's awesome, man. Yeah. Okay.
We did, like, you know, we played like a couple like house parties and basements and stuff, okay. And used to do like punk rock karaoke. We'd have someone That's come rad. Up and sing, you know?
Totally.
Yeah, it's like, even if you don't know the song, I feel like you can learn it in like 30 seconds, right? If someone's okay. like just naming a random like Descendants song or
sure.
something, you're like, cool, yeah, we can learn
100%,
that.
100%, yeah.
Yeah, it's easy.
Just listen for like, you know, the next 5 minutes of your life. I mean, they're like Descendants, if we're getting like super into it, like yeah. they're pretty technical, but like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But you know what I mean.
But, the, but
yeah.
the actual song itself and the melodies, yeah.
Yeah.
I get what you're saying.
Right.
So. Oh my God. Okay. So you're in California now. You're mm-hmm. like, you're getting your steps in, I guess, as far as like being a fighter.
Yeah, right,
you're trying
right.
to figure out like what it is you're trying to do out here. And then
yeah.
you stumble on music. And then mm-hmm. like, I mean, dude, the crazy thing to me is like, you know, you say you haven't been doing it this long, but I think it's just like, it's kind of like, it's kind of built in you though.
Oh yeah, man.
You know what I mean? Whether you want it to be or not, it's just kind of like, it's genetic.
It's
like
genetic, I mean, it's genetic.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, my dad was—he was a musician, but he didn't play like professionally or anything. Mm-hmm. He was, you know, he was in like he was a cinematographer when I was growing up. So
that's
like,
cool.
But he was like, you know, he was always gone. So he did his version of like touring, where it's like he'd work for like, you know, 12, 14 hours a day, come home, and then repeat. So I didn't really get to see my dad like all that much, you know. But mm-hmm. then there'd be like dry spells where like, you know, work wouldn't be coming in,
yeah,
and things like that. But you know, so it's just I've been always kind of around like entertainment, like,
yeah.
like my whole life. You know,
totally.
So it's interesting to just like talk to somebody who, you know, who knows all about that, even from like birth, man. I mean, so
dude, yeah, it was wild. I literally had my first few birthdays and major holidays on a tour bus, you know, like it's crazy. Like there are all kinds of pictures of me as a baby, like my dad's like holding me on stage and stuff, like Simba or some
like
shit.
The, yeah, yeah, right. I was just about to say that.
No, dude, it's crazy.
You're
so.
Like at like Red Rocks and like diapers or something.
Yeah.
Like, just like
literally. Yeah, they have all kinds of photos. It's so wild.
That's crazy. I mean, so I was gonna say. So now I'm still trying to get your story. So you start playing out here.
So yeah.
What happens like after?
Well, it was crazy because, you know, I thought my entire life I wanted to be a fighter. I wanted to be a professional athlete. Like,
okay.
It was just something I was really passionate about.
You spent, like, years and years,
yeah.
like, doing all of that.
My entire life. Mm-hmm. I started doing karate when I was, like, 5 and had my first, you know, amateur Muay Thai fight right after I turned 18. And, you know, I subsequently, like, when I turned, right before I turned 30, I had, like, my last Muay Thai fight. And I, like, you know, my knee came out of place in it,
God,
and
man.
I, like, chipped
yeah.
a piece of bone off my shin, and, like, it was just, Muay Thai is brutal. Even if you win,
True.
A lot of times you're going to the hospital anyways. There's
yeah.
no two ways about it. So, not a sustainable career, especially
right.
for, like, I'm a fun-size human being. I'm not, like, you know, one of these giant, like, you know, genetically gifted MMA fighters. So, for someone like me, yeah, yeah probably not going to work out in the long term, you know. But
yeah. But I also think that, like, I'm not a fighter. I mean,
no,
I know you look at me and you think, hey, Ryan can get in the ring and he can scrap
oh,
people
yeah.
for sure.
For sure.
But
you got the build for it, man.
Yeah, totally, man. Got yeah. the Hank
it's
Hill body.
It's all long, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, it's all long. And yeah. But what I was going to say, though, man, is that, like, you know, sometimes it's not all about like being, but it's about
no.
mind. It's almost like playing chess, right?
It is, absolutely.
In a way. Okay.
Especially like Muay Thai is they call it the science of 8 limbs. You know, it's like a professional boxing match, except you can punch, kick, knee, and elbow.
Right.
So, you know, there's a lot of ways to win, and MMA is like that plus everything else. So the best weapon you have absolutely is your mind.
Right.
The people who typically win are the people with good game plans and strategies, right?
Right, yeah,
so,
yeah.
And that's kind of what I did as a coach was help, you know, these people who are kind of accustomed to playing checkers, teach them how to play chess. And
wow.
that's essentially what I was doing for a living for a long time. But it's funny how much overlap
mm-hmm.
there is between professional fighting and playing shows.
Sure.
Like, getting ready for a show for me is like training for a fight, you know? It's like I'm running every day in the morning. I'm doing my vocal exercises. You
yeah.
know, I'm practicing, rehearsing with my band and getting ready for the moment so that when it rolls around, you don't have to think about it. And
mm-hmm.
you can just go out there and have a great time.
Yeah.
You know?
I think, what was I going to say? Yeah. I was going to say recently, you know, we hadn't played shows in like 18 months.
Oh, dude.
Right? have you played a show yet
no,
since okay.
Only virtual. Like, I have yet to
yeah.
play like a real show. It's been almost 2 years.
Okay.
Insane.
So I'm going to tell you a quick little story about my last show experience. I think like on our rider, that's like when you get things backstage,
yeah.
you know, like you get your fancy M&Ms and you get your
all the green ones.
All the green ones. Yeah, all the green
no,
M&Ms.
No brown M&Ms.
Yeah, make sure the reading what the artist wants. But
exactly.
I think I need to put on there a stress ball because yeah, we just played a show. It was like a couple thousand people that came out to this festival in Utah.
Nice.
Right? It was called Fork Fest, right? So we headlined this festival, and it didn't hit me until maybe like 5 minutes before that I was like going on stage. And I was like, holy shit. And like my heart was just like, it was racing, yeah. Man.
You can feel it in your eyeballs.
Yeah. So right then I realized, I was like, okay, I didn't like take enough time to like mentally get. And then like we're playing like a bunch of new songs. For like people that haven't heard it. I mean, like they've been familiar with our record because like it's been out for the last like, you know, by the time this comes out, it'll been out for almost a year.
Yeah.
But
and blew the hell up too.
But it's just like just getting to go on stage. It was just, I hadn't done it in so long.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So my advice too is like, make sure you're really, really in the game.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
But so yeah, I understand what you're saying just about trying to like,
yeah, you know, trying strategize. To
yeah, for sure.
Everybody has like their process of getting ready for performance, yeah. Whether it's like in the ring or on the stage or whatever you do. Like, you know, yeah. But that was like something that I struggled with for a long time was the idea of performance anxiety and like, you know, meditation. All those things helped me a lot. All the cliche stuff. Really works.
Yeah.
You know?
So, okay, I think this is a good segue to even just go into one of your songs.
Yeah.
So, all right. So tell us a little bit about what you want to play today and what.
Yeah,
what
I think by the time this comes out, we're going to have the new single out. It's called Red Light Appetite.
Okay.
Trev Lukather produced it. Good friend of mine.
Yep.
You know, son of Steve Lukather of Toto. Mm-hmm.
Totally.
The Eminent.
You know, I used to get lessons from, I used to get lessons from Joe Picaro.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God!
When I was like 19, yeah,
one of the best.
You know?
Wow.
Yeah, just that was. I mean, not Jeff, but yeah, you know, Joe, like his father. Yeah. So that was.
That family,
I was like,
everybody in that family is so talented.
Yeah, he was left-handed drummer, but I mean, I guess it was easy because it was like, you know, mirroring, like looking at him. But anyway, I didn't mean to cut you off. So.
No. It's
okay, Red Light Appetite.
Yeah, you know? Red Light Appetite. Yeah. So it's
such. I have the worst ADD, man. I swear.
Oh, dude, okay. You're in good company.
All right, cool.
But yeah, I mean, Red Light Appetite came about in an interesting way. Like, I've been messing around with a lot of different styles and genres over the last, like, 5 or 6 years that I've been playing music, and I've finally landed on the sound that I've been hearing for a long time, and the guy that really helped me get that, like, Joey, our mutual friend, shout out, you know, Joey Ariema,
Joey's
big white light.
Yeah,
great. Joey's amazing and super talented, and we were experimenting with a lot of different styles and genres. And Trev really liked what we were doing. He liked the last song he did, Cold Knife Karma, which we're going to be hearing later.
Cool.
And he wanted to write a little bit. And so we got together, and I've known Trev, like, you know, more than a decade. He's one of my best friends. And
that's great, yeah.
It just, like, everything happened so easy. He had a couple instrumental ideas, got together, sat down, wrote some lyrics, and we ended up cutting a whole EP, and Red Light Appetite is the newest single off of it, so...
All right.
There's some interesting subject matter on this stuff.
Okay.
But yeah.
Well, we're going to take a listen. Red Light Appetite by Andrew Hagar. Here we go.
Drowning in the thought of your lips, drowning in the dream of the push.
and we're back.
No. Why don't you tell me that story earlier, man? The hell? You could have told me that way earlier, dude.
Wait, which one?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Stupid. So, it's just I've literally done that, I think, every single time that I've had my show. So this is episode, I think, like almost 50 now. This is episode 49. I've literally done that on every episode. I've just laughed and said something stupid, and it's this Andy Kaufman kind of humor.
Yeah, man.
And I don't know if I'm going to ever stop. Maybe I will someday.
Don't stop.
All right. So we're back. All right. I think my levels are too hot, but it doesn't matter because we're hanging out.
We'll get it in post.
We'll get it in post. That's what they all say.
Yep.
So yeah. So okay. So you're writing music with people now.
Yeah, writing all kinds of stuff. I was helping other artists like write lyrics and stuff for a while. I was working with a couple different production teams and stuff.
Yeah.
And I've been all over the place.
So okay. So real quick. So you decide one day. So you're still fighting.
Okay, so essentially, like, yeah, this is an important story,
you wait,
too.
You
so
wake like, up, and you're just like, okay, I'm going to sing now.
Yeah.
Like, I have seen what, you know, I've been in the industry, like, your whole life.
My whole life.
You've seen it.
Yeah.
You're like, I am ready for the uncertainty and bad decisions and everything.
Bring it on.
Right? Okay.
Yeah.
So,
no, I mean, growing up, I had weird, like, fantasies about playing music, but I just never thought it was something I was going to do. You know, I used to watch, like, remember, like, when Blu-ray first came on the scene, you know, dating myself a little bit here, I guess. Yeah, I don't
okay.
know. But, like, no, like, Nine Inch Nails had, like, Beside You in Time, right? It was, like, this tremendous live performance.
Uh-huh.
And I just remember watching, like, Trent Reznor up there just, like, ripping with somebody else, like, just, you know, guys trading guitar solos and shit. I think they were playing, like, Wish or something off the Broken EP. But, and I was just like, man, that looks amazing. I want to do that, you know? But I never thought there was any real avenue for me to do that, which might sound stupid to some people because they're like, do you know, like, what, you know, there's like a legacy factor here and all this stuff, but it's not that easy. Like,
no,
you know,
I was going to say,
it's not like that simple for most people.
Yeah, that's like my dad, he, you know, again, cinematographer. Yeah. It'd be like people are like, oh, well, like Ryan can just do that because his dad does it.
Right.
You
like, it's that like, simple.
Yeah. It's just like, oh, yeah, just go do it.
No.
Like, yeah.
And like nepotism is a thing, but it's not what people think it is for most people.
Right.
That's not how it
100%.
Works.
Yeah.
But no, so one day, like I said, you know, I was getting ready to watch, like, I think Jesse was going to come over and watch, like, a Conor McGregor fight or something, and he brought his little sister. We hit it off.
Mm-hmm.
We're, like, hanging out. And then, you know, her mom, it was, like, a tour manager for Chris, was like, oh, hey, you guys should come out and play with us. Because they have, like, a really small kind of family circuit when they go out and play shows. You know, Chris is retired now, but when they were doing that, they would just bring out one or two of their kids to, like, carry guitars and like act like roadies and security.
Totally,
and
dude.
She's managing.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah.
So they
100%.
Had us come out and do this Celtic Connection Festival in Scotland. And so like the first real show I ever got paid to play was in the Queen's Hall in Edinburgh.
Oh my God.
It was insane.
Wow.
And like the hallowed ground, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it was just incredible. But I remember the important thing here is like my first amateur fight I had.
Yeah,
I was scared shitless. I hated every second of it, and couldn't wait for it to be over.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, even though I did fairly well, I lost a close split decision against a guy who had a bunch of fights way bigger than me. That's how it always went down, because I'm not a big person.
How many fights do you think you've done?
Oh, amateur fights? Like,
sure.
I've had, like three amateur fights, some smokers, a bunch of jiu-jitsu and grappling tournaments, a bunch of karate stuff when I was a kid. Like, I don't know in estimation, but, like,
you think it's in, like, triples, or you think it's, like, in the...
I mean, no. Like, in terms of, like amateur stuff, like, probably, like, under 10, you know?
Really?
There's, like, smokers, which are, like, you literally just show up at a gym, and they match you up based on your height and weight and experience. But everybody, like, sandbags. Everybody lies about it.
Uh-huh.
So, like, I went to go to my first, like, smoker, you know? And I'm, like, literally an 18-year-old kid with, like, 3 years of Muay Thai training and grappling and stuff.
Yeah.
And they matched me up against this kid from the UK who had already had, like... Over there, it's different. They have different tiers. They have, like, you know, C class and B class, A class, S class, and, like...
Okay.
For the first few amateur fights, you know, you're in one of the lower classes. This kid was already up to, I think, like C or B class.
Okay.
He'd had a lot of fights, and they just threw me in there with this guy. I think his name's Neil Dunn.
Okay.
Shout out Neil Dunn if he's out there. You know, I don't know. Really nice guy.
You're
but,
like, yeah, this guy, Neil Diamond.
Yeah, right. Neil. Wouldn't that be a thing?
Yeah, right.
But no, you know, this kid was like over 6 feet tall, and I'm like, whatever, maybe like 5'7" on a good day. So, you know.
Okay.
It was, like, it looked like a mismatch, but I, you know, I hit this kid with some big bombs, kicked him in the head, and almost knocked him out in the second round. So I made it to a split decision. Okay. But I just remember the point here is, like, I hated every second of it.
Yeah.
And it was something that I'd loved my entire life that I thought I wanted, and then I got to it and realized it's absolutely not what I wanted. But because I was 18 and young and dumb and trying to keep the dream alive, I kept going.
Yeah.
And after, you know, a decade or more in the sport, I was just like, listen, like, right before my 30th birthday when I had this last fight, it's like I had both of my rotator cuffs torn. I had had knee surgery on my left knee from 25 on, bad lower back, bad hip, you know, all this stuff. I wasn't even 30 yet.
Right.
I've been doing one of the roughest sports on earth for, you know, half of my life, all of my adult life, and I was just ready for something else.
Sure.
And then, boom, like magic, this thing came into my life. And the first time I played that show in Edinburgh, I was so, like, I wasn't, like, scared, but I was nervous that I sucked, that we sucked.
Okay.
And as soon as I got out there and we played, like, halfway through the first song and I saw people in the crowd smiling and having a good time, I was like, oh, wow, we don't suck. And then it became the best thing ever, and I didn't want to stop playing. We played, like, a 15-minute set or some shit, and I was like, man, I could play this all night, dude. This is insane.
Yeah.
And so it for me, in my mind, I was just like, man, this is like everything I thought that fighting was going to be for me, like how fulfilling it was and how at peace I felt up there. Like, there's not very many moments in life when you can really just like bask in the present and really live it.
Yeah.
And that's like,
yeah, I feel that with, you know, even with music is you're
that's
like,
what
you're
I mean.
Playing and you're like, okay, what's the next thing?
Yeah.
Or like, what's the, you know,
right.
You spend all this time getting to like. There, you spend all this time getting to like the show that you're prepping for, and then after the show you're like, okay, well, what's coming after this? And it's like, it's so, sometimes it is hard to just live in that moment.
Totally, man. You know? And for me, like, being able to go up there and play music, that really is one of the only times that I can really truly be present. Like, I have a lot of anxiety and like ADD and all that stuff. And
same.
You know, you go back and forth. You're worried about something in the future. You're stressing about something that happened in the past.
Yep.
You know, it's tough to be just there.
Totally.
And music helped get me there. So it was a huge moment for me. And I was like, man, this is what I'll do whatever I have to do to make this happen for the rest of my life.
So, I mean, like, did you have any, like, kind of formal training, like, before, like, just before getting into it? Or did you, like...
I sang in choir.
Yeah.
I took music lessons for a little while. Like, my first instrument was, like, drums.
Yeah.
But I didn't really stick with it, and I could never practice because my neighbors wanted to kill me. So.
Uh-huh. I know all about that, too. You know what's crazy is that, like, I'm not trying to plug anything, but Remo, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, I'm a Remo guy.
Oh,
but,
really?
Yeah. So I'm a Remo artist. Yeah. No, I am. But what I was going to say is when I was a kid, you know, playing drums, you had to put these
pads on.
Yeah, pads, dude.
Oh, yeah, the pads.
Now,
and it sucks. It changes the whole game.
Totally. But now Remo made this head, and it's called a silent stroke, where you literally can hit it, like, as hard as you want, and it like, you know, it bounces
silent
back.
Stroke.
Silent stroke. It looks like a mesh. Yeah, it looks like a mesh head, and you know, has a logo on it, and you can hit it like as hard as you want. And there's like rebound and all sorts of stuff. So you're not ruining like anything.
Yeah,
like, in your body, your joints are. Yeah,
and that's the thing too. Like I used to put the practice pads on to mute the sound, and it changes the whole velocity and the way that it comes off.
Yeah,
and
these don't
trains you the wrong way. Yeah, so this is really cool. So go pick out a silent stroke head from Remo.
Yeah,
you know, if you want to practice, your neighbors want to kill you.
Yeah, exactly. It's more advanced now than anything, you know. But
not a plug officially.
Not a plug. Exactly. So I mean, but I don't think they've had that for like maybe just a few years.
Wow.
Because I think if I was like a kid, I would have for sure. I could have played all day long, and it would have felt like the real thing.
Dude, yeah, change the game.
Yeah, but I just remember being so annoyed in, like, you know, even high school having to put those things on, and it was still loud too.
You know,
it wasn't like, I mean, it dampened the sound like a little bit, but it wasn't like. And then the sound off pads, you get like, you know, they get beaten up so bad that maybe you have to go buy new ones.
Yeah,
you know,
and it's just a big waste of money.
Huge waste. I mean, dude, drums are expensive, man. Someone's like, hey, I want to be a drummer. I'm like, you sure?
Yeah, you know? Sure about this?
Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts. You know, you got to know like when things break. You got to know how to fix it. You got to know.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
it's cheap to be a singer. All you have to do is use somebody else's greasy mic.
Yeah.
You know,
that's right? Great. Yeah, a greasy mic. Yeah. But then, what if your voice goes out? Like, do you have to take, like, steroids? You have to take, like, you know, a bunch of tea and, like...
Everybody's got their methods. Dude, yeah.
It could become expensive, you know? Then you have to go to, like, mental therapy, and then you have to go to...
talk to your therapist to talk about your crippling anxiety, because that one time your voice gave out in the middle of the set, and you just, you bombed the rest of the time. Yeah.
God.
No, that's a real thing. Like, I don't know. People that don't play, I don't think they understand quite, like, how much goes into a show.
Sure.
You know, for most things. I mean, same thing. You watch somebody fight and like you're like, oh, yeah, I could do that. Because the guy you're watching is like a professional that's been doing it their whole life.
Right.
And
they make it look easy. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. There's this weird illusion, right?
Uh-huh.
But no, I'm like, I had a little bit of formal training growing up, like with, you know, choir and all that stuff.
Sure.
But I didn't really start like practicing with a purpose and stuff until, you know, right before I went out with Chris. That was it.
That's wild, man.
And only in you know, the past 5 or 6 years, I feel like I've made a lot of strides, but that's like my entire life. Like, you know, I do it like I'm training for a fight. So I do vocal lessons, you know, all the time, once or twice a week. I do, you know, my vocal exercises every day. Mm-hmm. I try to stay in good physical shape, you know.
Right.
Been taking lessons with this wonderful coach, Amber Morris, who used to coach, I think, Jonathan Cain.
Okay.
Attorney, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, and like she's fantastic. She's like opened me up in a whole new way. And the new music, I mean, I think I'm singing better than I've ever sang in my entire life before. So I feel very, very proud and confident of what we've
been able to
accomplish. Yeah.
I mean, so before, I know it seems like this is like the, you know, the key question every time.
Yeah, yeah.
For like the last like year and a half whenever I bring up people. But it's just like, when, how did the whole like COVID stuff like affect you? Like, how did it affect your plans? Like, what was happening? You know?
So I've like everyone else in the entertainment industry, been on like a really crazy roller coaster ride the last few years, just trying to like get over and, you know, build a sustainable kind of thing here. And I had a couple setbacks like in late 2019 and then had been working really hard early 2020 to get things moving. And like, you know, we were getting ready to, you know, go to South by Southwest and like go play some shows in the UK and like do some stuff around Judgment Day and Cold Knife Karma. I was going to release a completely separate EP with some older music that I had been sitting on for a while.
Okay.
And then all of that stuff, all those plans just got gutted like one by one. And then, you know, by about June last year, when everything was really getting shut down and the massive protests and all this stuff was happening, I like kind of had like a bit of a nervous breakdown. I was like, oh, is my life and career and all these things I wanted over? Like, what's happening? But, you know?
100%.
Everybody, man.
I totally get it.
Yeah, and it didn't matter if you were in entertainment or what. Everyone's like, what's happening? Is the world ending? This is insane.
Well, yeah, because they were like, you know? Okay, this is going to be a couple weeks. Okay, now this is till May.
Nope.
Now it's till July.
Yeah, now it's still 2021.
Yeah, it's like, hell. And, you know, even I didn't even know if, like, shows were going to happen this year, man.
Same.
You know?
Like, I had no idea. I tried to book some things, you know, and it was right now, there's like a crazy bull rush to market where like every band on earth is trying to get out on the road.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
You know, and if you don't have a good booking agent, you're screwed. So
yeah, you're screwed until like 2022, something like that.
Four,
maybe.
You know, who
yeah,
knows?
Could, yeah, yeah, you never know.
but yeah, no. But no, I mean, I was really worried that everything was just going to, you know, go kind of tits up for me and I was just going to be, you know, 6 feet under there.
Yeah.
But no, I actually like pivoted and started really going in on like, you know, the meditation and the personal development stuff and started doing like a lot more vocal exercises, started writing more. And then, you know, everything changed. And now it's like, I don't know. I mean, I've released a lot of stuff over the years, different project names and nothing really stuck, you know, and out the gate. I mean, this new stuff that I've done with Trev has gotten us a lot of traction with labels and we're, you know, we're talking to a lot of people and it just like all of a sudden clicked. So, I think that a lot of that has to do with, you know, really focusing inward through the pandemic and using that time as a time of growth.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of people I know were just kind of like, you know, riding a stimmy thing. You know, they're just like, screw it, man. I'm just going to sit at home and, like, watch every single thing on Netflix.
Yep, every single thing. Hulu, Netflix, HBO, you whatever.
Know,
yeah.
Friggin', like, you know, get, like, alcohol delivered to my house and just like, you know, whatever. Like,
I mean, dude, I went through spurts of things. I was like, all right,
same.
I'm gonna work out a whole bunch.
Yeah,
I'm gonna go on hikes all the time every day. Okay, now I'm gonna just like binge watch, you know, Breaking Bad.
Oh,
and
yeah,
now I'm gonna binge watch whatever the fuck, you know.
Right.
I only say Breaking Bad because I'd like never seen Breaking Bad until the pandemic. Yeah,
oh, man.
I was just like, okay, well, I guess I got time now to do this.
And what did you think though?
I thought, you know, it's like you start to feel bad for, you know, for Walter, and then by the end of it, you hate him.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
That's an emotional roller coaster ride
yeah,
for sure.
Totally.
There's a lot there.
Yeah, I didn't watch the I didn't watch any of the spinoffs, you know?
Better Call Saul and all that stuff.
I didn't watch
That's
that.
Fun. I really like Bob Odenkirk. I used to love Mr. Show.
Dude, Mr.
Show! Oh, my God. People don't know about that, but that show was incredible.
David Cross, dude. He's the best.
One of the best. Those guys, as a writing team, doesn't get much better. So many people owe their entire comedy careers to those guys and what they did with Mr. Show.
100%.
Like, there would be no Tim and Eric without Mr. Show.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Not even close.
I love it, though.
There's another show. By the time this airs, for sure it'll already been out for like a couple months. But there's a show called I Think You Should Leave.
Have you seen it?
I love that show. And there's a new season coming out
tomorrow. Oh my God.
Isn't that crazy?
I'm gonna check it out. Yeah. I actually just found that show fairly recently.
Oh,
just
dude, exploring. It's the best. I got turned on to it while I was on tour, and I watched it over and over and over and over again. Like, it just no
hilarious
return. yeah
so it does have that kind of style, that kind of vibe. Mm-hmm. Same thing, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
It's so good.
So going back to so the whole pandemic, you know, it's just like my band, it's like we went to go, you know, record a record, and then by the time we were done and turned everything in, it was like, you know, about to be completely finished, bam, pandemic, and then we released music and like October,
man.
And then the song went to like number one at freaking like on the all charts, and then we couldn't tour off of it, and then we were like, you know, getting asked to go on like late night shows, but we couldn't physically be there.
Oh,
you know, it's God. Just like it's like a double edged sword, man.
Honestly,
you know, so I mean, it's all. Look, I'm super grateful. Like, I've had those experiences, and you know, things like that have happened.
Yeah,
but it's just like it didn't happen in the way that it normally happens for people,
right?
You
which
know? So
I don't know if it like. Obviously, we're living in a whole new era now.
Yeah.
You know? But it's like, I think if this thing were to get worse or come back or whatever, like, hopefully everyone would be a little bit more prepared this time. And, like, now we know how to, like, do things virtually, for instance.
Oh, I'm going to make a toilet paper fort this time. I'm going to go. I'm going to the store and just buy it all.
Yeah.
You know? So, like, there's, like, this whole, like... I hate talking about this shit, man. It's just there's like a Delta variant now. I mean, I'm vaccinated, but it just I had to go. You know, I'm hoping this happens. I mean, by the time this comes out, for sure, it'll already have happened, I think. But like Reading and Leeds, like we're supposed to go do that this year. You know, we'll see.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. So real quick, I think this is a good segue to go and do another song.
Yeah, sure.
And so let's talk about it.
So yeah, Cold Knife Karma. Yeah.
Okay. Cold Knife Karma.
Yeah, Cold Knife Karma, you know, I'm a big fan of these weird titles like this that kind of rhyme and stuff.
Okay.
You know, it's kind of part of my thing, writing those hooks.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but no, this song was fun. This kind of just came out of a weird thing that happened. Like, somebody gave me, like, a weird backhanded compliment, and, you know, I was like, oh, like, karma's gonna come
for sure you
want
to stab him.
No,
I'm just kidding.
But I stab him in the front, all right? I look him right in the eyes.
Yep.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
But, no, so these lyrics kind of just came out, and I was hanging and writing with Joey, you know, who was at the time, like, the main guy. He was...
Was that in Nashville? Was that when you guys wrote together?
We were finishing off a bunch of songs, one of which was Cold Knife Karma. We had started in L.A. I started writing with Bonnie Diamond. I think now she's got, like, some crazy big pub deal with Warner, so congrats to her.
Yeah.
And my friend Wes, who was running... a really cool artist development project out here, and he was matching me with some other songwriters so I could help them, and they were helping me, and it was a fun exchange. I'd never really written with a lot of other people in that capacity before, and it was like a whole new exercise for me, which was great.
Yeah, just trying to team up with different people just to see what you get.
Yeah, you know, and
I wrote a song with Joey, dude. Like, he's amazing.
He is amazing, dude. That guy is incredibly gifted.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, it was cool the way it all kind of came together. It was unexpected. We were trying to do something completely different that day, and then that just ended up superseding everything we were doing and becoming this thing. And we juggled around multiple different, like, production styles and ideas, and then it wasn't really working, and then we just landed on this sound when we kind of stripped it away and tried to make it more just, like, bluesy the way that we had written it, like the guitar lick and everything, you know?
Yeah.
And then it just worked. It was funny because, like, sometimes you overthink things, right?
Sure.
When you're writing. And I've found the most success just boiling it down to the bare essentials. And that's kind of what that song was. And it tells a story that everyone relates to. Someone screws you over, and then, you know, you don't have to get back at them because karma's going to do it for you.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, this is Cold Knife Karma from Andrew Hagar.
Okay. your praise for the things you earn. I know you'll have the day that you deserve. Ain't no magic in blood that you burn.
Couldn't have come up, pierce my skin, bleed my sins, and you twisted it. You can't run from a cold hard fact. Couldn't have come up is at your back. Your skin and you still sneaking around. Life ain't fair, it's got you on all fours. I got mine, it's time that you get yours. Cold enough karma, pierce my skin, leave my sins as you twist it in. You can't run from a cold heart fact. Cold enough karma is at your
chug, 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 chug.
No, these things go down like water, man.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a, what do I have in front of me? Got the sparkling ice drink.
Delicious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all right. You
so
know?
You don't drink anymore, right?
No, I don't. Tremendous. I haven't even publicly said that yet.
But, oh, my God. You know, I'm sorry. Breaking news.
No, you're good. Yeah. You're good. No, it's, I, let's just say the pandemic did a lot. You know.
Oh, me. Yeah.
So I just, you know.
I totally understand.
I had to make a change.
Yeah, like I said.
All of it.
Kirkland
know?
Vodka was getting delivered.
Was you? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, those Costco will get you, man.
Oh, they really will.
What do they have a special? It's like buy like 9, get, you know, 10 free or something like that.
Something like that. Yeah, vodka for the rest of your life. Add a toilet paper, but we got vodka. Yep. We're good.
Totally. Yeah. All right. So check it out. So we are in the part of your story now where you're about to go. You're about to go do this now because, I mean, you're about to go play. So,
yeah, right.
So what are your plans for the future? I mean, we're almost out of time, you know, but like, what's like, I guess, what do you have planned now with like, you know, you're releasing music?
We're releasing music.
Do you have like a full band you're going to go on tour with?
I started. So right before the pandemic started, I put together a full band and we played a couple shows, which went really well. And then obviously everything got shut down. And so I've been talking to the guys and we got to get back in and start rehearsing. But I mean, I have all this new music that I wrote with Trev. It's like harder than anything I've ever released. It's like very like, you know, kind of like grungy rock and roll, like modern day grunge.
I love grunge.
Me too, man.
I mean, I feel like grunge sort of like, okay, for me, I got into like Nirvana.
Yeah.
You know, just like
everybody.
Every other fucking, you know, kid.
Yeah.
growing up, they changed the game for everybody.
Changed the landscape.
Yeah. For everything. And then from there I found like Green Day. And then from there, just like my punk rock roots kind of grew. But I feel
same.
Like Nirvana and Green Day were kind of in the same, I don't know how, in the same little bit of a playing field. And then,
It was bringing like a more accessible kind of sound from like a real kind of esoteric thing. Like the time when we were growing up, like I was a really big fan of Green Day too, but like all of my older, like crustier punk friends from the Bay were
they sold out.
Yeah, exactly. They hated them. You know, and it's like, I grew up listening to the same bands as those guys. Like, people, you know, like, more the, like, DC, like, Bad Brains kind of thing. You know, Cro-Mags, that whole scene.
That's cool.
And the heavier stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I loved Green Day, and I loved, like, skate punk growing up. Like, mm-hmm. all the old Epitaph bands stuff.
Like Pennywise.
And, like, NoFX.
Fucking,
and, dude, yeah,
come Bad on, Religion.
Man. Yeah, man. Yeah. That whole set.
The Punkorama fucking.
Yes,
dude. Yes.
Exactly. I used to listen to that on, like, the bus.
Yes.
You know, dude. Yeah. Like, going to school on my little C player. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, your anti-skip.
Yep, exactly. With the little shock pads and stuff. Yeah, so, you know, and that was, like, a big moment. But that's what I'm saying. I've been trying to, like, find a way to bring together all these influences I had as a kid. Like, I loved bands like AFI and, like, Nine Inch Nails and some of the darker stuff. And I think we finally found a cohesive sound that it's not, like, ripping anything off. It feels very fresh. I can't think of anything that really sounds like what we're doing right now.
It's
out there. But it will definitely remind you of a lot of the things that, like, we probably grew up listening to. And I'm really proud of what we've created. And it's, like, definitely a modern-day hookier grunge with, like, more of a singer-songwriter sensibility, because that's where I come from. So, like, I'm really proud of a lot of these lyrics. They're very meaningful to me, and I hope people relate to them, which I think they will.
Yeah.
You know, and there's some good stuff on what we've done with the EP so far. And we'll see if we end up turning it into an LP, but the plans are absolutely to get back out on the road and start touring whenever that's possible for us. Like, you know, I'm going to be working on a kind of like a you know, pre-recorded little live thing that we're going to put out when the songs start to drop, you know?
Okay.
It's going to be, there's going to be a lot of good stuff coming in the future. And right now we're, like I said, we're talking to a couple labels and we're going to see what happens with that. But I think by the fall we'll be playing some, you know, some live shows, and then hopefully the start of 2022 we'll have a bigger tour where we're opening for a bigger band. So
would that be like when you're playing shows, like, you know, in the fall when this kind of comes out, when people are listening right now, are you going to be playing, like, in, like, not locally, but like California?
We're playing all over the place. Yeah.
Wait, okay.
Yeah. I mean, we'll definitely have some shows in California. Probably do a smaller LA show. And then, like I said,
if I'm around, I'm definitely,
you got to be there, man.
Yeah.
Come on. But yeah, it's, cause it's a whole new era. Like, I've been previous to this playing mostly, like, solo or duo acoustic.
Yeah.
You know, and, like, taking bigger, more produced songs and, like, boiling down.
Sure.
You know, and, like, I love doing that. It's an intimate setting, and I think that, you know, people can appreciate the song itself more.
Where have you played, like, in L.A., just real quick?
Oh, all over the place, man. But, like, we had a residency at the Hotel Cafe.
Ah.
We were doing with, like, Holy Stone for a while.
That was the last place IDK played.
Oh, really?
I'm not even joking. Yeah, it was, like, some, like, showcase thing. But we'll get back to that in a second. But so you're playing,
so,
like,
I played that. I played, like, you know, Gold Diggers, played down South Bay, like, played Canyon Club. Like,
Canyon Club. I played there once.
Yeah.
Years ago. I was opening up for Strung Out.
Oh, that's red.
It's playing with this band, I Am Ghost.
I am Ghost.
We were on Epitaph.
Oh,
like
shit.
This is cool. This was in, like, 2007.
Yeah.
When it was happening, yeah.
Yeah, shout out to the homie Nino from Teenage Wrist. That's a great new grunge band. I don't know if you heard of them.
Yeah, you know what's funny? I knew,
really
so IDK, Marshall. we played a show with them. We played a couple shows with them over in England.
Nice.
Yeah, we did Reading and Leeds back in 2018.
Oh.
This guy Cam was in the band at one point.
Yeah. I don't know if he's still in the band.
No,
I'm not sure.
I don't think he is. But but Cam, he's another amazing musician, man. He had this band called Chain Gang of 1974.
Nice.
Really dancey, kind of like, at least when I saw it, it kind of reminded me of, like, maybe like The Rapture a little bit.
Yeah,
I don't know if
cool.
you know them. Yeah. So pretty dance, like high energy club kind of, you know, indie stuff.
Like that.
So anyway, Teenage Wrist,
Yeah, they're great. Yeah, no, Nino's my boy, and
that's awesome.
They're killing it. They just opened up for 303 at the Red Rocks, man.
That's another really funny story. Real quick. We got offered that show.
Really?
We had to turn it down, yeah.
Why?
It's complicated. I think there was another show that was gonna happen for us with the radio station that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
They've been playing our song a lot, and we were like, oh, we should probably do that. You know,
damn.
I think by the time when 303 announced the show, they didn't announce, like, who was opening. So I feel like we kind of missed out on that. And the radio station that has been playing our song a lot wanted us to come play their thing at Fiddler's Green. So by the time this airs, that would have already happened. And you know what? It was really great. It was fun. I wasn't nervous this time, you know? So we played with Grandson. It was great.
Oh, man, that's cool.
We played with Half Alive. It was so awesome.
Yeah, Grandson. Yeah. Going massive.
And then Rise Against was on the bill.
Oh, shit. Dude, I mean, this hasn't
happened yet, but it's already happened because people are listening to it right now, so it already happened. Yeah. So
man,
it was great.
Good friend of mine saw the first show Rise Against ever played in, like, some Chicago basement. back when they were like, you know, more of a hardcore band. Yeah.
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 They used to, you know, the bass player from that band used to be in this band called 88 Fingers Louie. Do you remember that band?
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
What the hell?
They were like a Hopeless Records band. I remember, dude, I remember my mom drove me in like the fucking height of winter. And it was like a car full of us. It was, I don't know, we were all like 15 or something like that.
Yeah.
And it was just it was freezing cold, and like there was maybe, you know, maybe 20 people at the show.
That's how it goes.
Yeah. It was like, it was at this like gothic club called Area 51. And
nice.
I just remember nobody was there, and the band was probably pissed off because they like risked their lives coming from Wyoming.
Right. Oh,
you know,
my
coming
God.
Down
in the
like
snow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jesus.
God, holy shit.
But those are the days, though. It's like knowing that you've done that and you have that in your back pocket, played like some shitty club for five people, you know?
100%.
That's great. I think that's the
I've
best.
I've been there.
Yeah, me
that's
too.
My whole career has
it's
been like
same.
Just ups and downs. Just
yeah.
Crazy as shit. But, okay, so, Andrew, we don't have too much time left.
Okay.
What's the sorry, story you looked at me, that's
yeah,
funny.
I'm like, I wish I could see this.
Yeah. So what's, like, the best way people can find you? What's the best way people
you know,
can
all
keep
the,
in touch
all the
with
socials.
You?
Yeah, you can check me out, andrewhagar.com. You want to hit me on Instagram, that's where I'm the most active.
Yeah.
I don't really have a TikTok presence yet, although by the time this comes out, I might. Who knows?
Yeah, I just don't, like, look, I am, like, you know, do I dare say I am like almost 40 years old?
It's crazy.
Do I need a TikTok? I mean, I have one.
Yeah.
I just haven't done anything with it.
Yeah, you're just observing, right?
It has like no followers.
Yeah,
you know?
But I mean, as soon as you start dropping videos, though,
like,
you're going to go
like
gangbusters.
What am I going to do?
Man, okay, look, back to Teenage Wrist. Look at my boy Nino. He's got some hilarious videos. They did, what are they, that Bus It, you know, video thing, and like he was like, you know, taking a shit, and did bust it. And it was hilarious, and it like went viral. You know, so
and now they're huge.
Yeah, and now they're massive.
And
so
now they're opening up for 303 at Red Rocks.
Rocks. There, that's how it works.
Just take a shit on TikTok, and all your wildest dreams can come true.
Exactly.
There
but
you
no,
go.
You can find me on Instagram at Andrew Hagar Official.
Okay.
Get my artist page on Facebook, although I'm not really active on Facebook because it's full of crazy people. You know,
it is full of crazy people.
No offense, but yeah,
uh-huh.
That's real.
Yeah.
Or check out the website, andrewhagar.com. You can find me on Spotify, Andrew Hagar, same thing. That's my actual name. I'm everywhere. So
you are everywhere. You are for real. I'm. It's so hard to keep up these days with just everybody and everything. But you're all over the place, though, man.
Hey, man, I like to travel. I sold my house a while ago, and you know, I mean, now we can't really travel that much. But I'm traveling within
domestically.
The safe limitations. And as soon as international starts popping again, I'm out of here.
You're going.
Yeah, I'm in Iceland or some shit.
Dude, I still have never been to Iceland.
You got to go, man.
Yeah.
I got a chance to play out there back in 2016 and played some amazing shows at like Harpa and all this. It was incredible. I did a Scandinavian tour, and it's one of the coolest things I've ever done in my life.
Oh my God, man. Yeah. I'm definitely envious of that. One of the only places I still haven't been to is like basically like Asia. That and like South Africa. Those are the two places I haven't been. I've been everywhere else I've wanted to go.
In New Zealand?
You know? I've been to New Zealand twice.
Damn, I've been dying to go.
That was
forever.
Fun. Yeah, it's basically, it's kind of like one, you know, that in Australia is like kind of like one giant California.
Yeah, so man, that doesn't sound bad.
No, it's great. You've been to Australia, maybe?
No.
Australia.
I've been dying to go to Australia.
It's amazing, man. Just full of beautiful people, and you get to go to this place called the. If you're in a band, they let you in for free, but it's called the Lone Pine Koala Sanctuary.
Dude, I've heard of this.
It's where everybody like holds the fucking koala, and everybody gets their picture, and blah blah blah. You know, so all right. Well, hey, Andrew, thanks again
so much for
coming on the show. I really, really appreciate it. Up next is Gon Fishkin. So. Tune in, and maybe they haven't cut my show off this time like they did the last like three times on accident, you know? So maybe people will hear this time. I don't know. Whatever. You know, I just say whatever, man. You know, that's the thing about Ryan Seaman. You never know what's going to happen. So, all right, guys. Thanks so much, and we'll see you next time. We'll see you next week right here on Ryan Seaman and Friends on Adobe Radio.